Hello, this is the listening part of Open English Language Olympiad for 2012. It will consist of two tasks. You will hear the texts twice. Task 1. The first science fiction book. You will hear a talk about the first science fiction book. Read the sentences, then listen, and complete the sentences with one word or a number. You have 1 minute to read the task.
Although science fiction is often considered to be a fairly modern literary genre, it has a long tradition. By the end of the 19th century, novels involving science and fantasy had already become popular. But as James Renshaw explains, the genre goes back even further.
The first novel that is generally recognised as a work of science fiction is Frankenstein, written by Mary Shelley in 1817. Mary Shelley had an unconventional and often tragic life. She was the only child of Mary Wollstonecraft, the famous feminist, and William Godwin, a philosopher and novelist. She never knew her mother, who died in childbirth, but her father had the very highest expectations of her. Her earliest years were imbued with a peculiar sort of gothicism. On most days she would go for a walk with her father to the St. Pancras churchyard to visit her mother's grave, and Godwin taught her to read and spell her name by getting her to trace her mother's inscription on the gravestone. From an early age, she was surrounded by famous philosophers, writers, and poets. Coleridge made his first visit when Mary was 2 years old. At the age of 16, Mary ran away to live with the 21-year-old poet Percy Shelley, despite the fact that he was already married at the time. Although she was cast out of society, even by her father, this inspirational liaison produced her masterpiece, Frankenstein. She conceived of the novel when she was just 19 and was spending the summer with Shelley in Switzerland. On the night of June the 16th, Mary and Percy Shelley could not return to their home due to an incredible storm and spent the night at the Villa Diodati with the poet Lord Byron. The group read aloud a collection of German ghost stories, and this inspired Byron to challenge them all to write a ghost story. Mary spent a week thinking of a suitable subject for her story, and it came to her when she had what she called a waking nightmare.
I saw the pale student of unhallowed arts kneeling beside the thing he had put together. I saw the hideous phantasm of a man stretched out, then, on the working of some powerful engine, show signs of life. His success would terrify the artist. He would rush away, hope that this thing would subside into dead matter. He opens his eyes. Behold, the horrid thing stands at his bedside, opening his curtains.
In her story, the monster is created by a young student, Victor Frankenstein, who assembles the creature from various body parts he collects from graveyards and slaughterhouses. The creature he creates escapes and flees to the woods. At first, he is innocent and lonely, but he begins to change when he is rejected and attacked by humans because of his horrifying appearance. The creature realizes that the only hope of escaping from total isolation is for Victor Frankenstein to create a female for him, which he initially agrees to do. However, Victor then changes his mind, and this leads the monster to embark on a course of horrifying revenge. Mary completed the novel in May of 1817, and when it was published the following year, it became a huge success. The same, however, could not be said of her personal life, which was marred by further tragedies. Mary and Shelley married, but fierce public hostility towards the couple drove them to Italy. Initially, they were happy, but two of their children died there, and Mary never fully recovered. When Mary was only 24, her husband drowned, leaving her alone with a 2-year-old son. For her remaining 29 years, she lived in England, which she despised because of the morality and social system. She was shunned by conventional circles and worked as a professional writer to support her father and her son. Mary became an invalid at the age of 48. She died in 1851 of a brain tumour with poetic timing. The Great Exhibition, which was a showcase of technological progress, was opened. This was the same scientific technology that she had warned against in her most famous book, Frankenstein.
You have a minute now to check your work. Then you will hear the text a second time.
Although science fiction is often considered to be a fairly modern literary genre, it has a long tradition. By the end of the 19th century, novels involving science and fantasy had already become popular. But as James Renshaw explains, the genre goes back even further.
The first novel that is generally recognised as a work of science fiction is Frankenstein, written by Mary Shelley in 1817. Mary Shelley had an unconventional and often tragic life. She was the only child of Mary Wollstonecraft, the famous feminist, and William Godwin, a philosopher and novelist. She never knew her mother, who died in childbirth, but her father had the very highest expectations of her. Her earliest years were imbued with a peculiar sort of gothicism. On most days, she would go for a walk with her father to the St. Pancras churchyard to visit her mother's grave, and Godwin taught her to read and spell her name by getting her to trace her mother's inscription on the gravestone. From an early age, she was surrounded by famous philosophers, writers, and poets. Coleridge made his first visit when Mary was 2 years old. At the age of 16, Mary ran away to live with the 21-year-old poet Percy Shelley, despite the fact that he was already married at the time. Although she was cast out of society, even by her father, this inspirational liaison produced her masterpiece, Frankenstein. She conceived of the novel when she was just 19 and was spending the summer with Shelley in Switzerland. On the night of June the 16th, Mary and Percy Shelley could not return to their home due to an incredible storm and spent the night at the Villa Diodati with the poet Lord Byron. The group read aloud a collection of German ghost stories, and this inspired Byron to challenge them all to write a ghost story. Mary spent a week thinking of a suitable subject for her story, and it came to her when she had what she called a waking nightmare.
I saw the pale student of unhallowed arts kneeling beside the thing he had put together. I saw the hideous phantasm of a man stretched out, then, on the working of some powerful engine, show signs of life. His success would terrify the artist. He would rush away, hope that this thing would subside into dead matter. He opens his eyes. Behold, the horrid thing stands at his bedside, opening his curtains.
In her story, the monster is created by a young student, Victor Frankenstein, who assembles the creature from various body parts he collects from graveyards and slaughterhouses. The creature he creates escapes and flees to the woods. At first, he is innocent and lonely, but he begins to change when he is rejected and attacked by humans because of his horrifying appearance. The creature realizes that the only hope of escaping from total isolation is for Victor Frankenstein to create a female for him, which he initially agrees to do. However, Victor then changes his mind, and this leads the monster to embark on a course of horrifying revenge. Mary completed the novel in May of 1817, and when it was published the following year, it became a huge success. The same, however, could not be said of her personal life, which was marred by further tragedies. Mary and Shelley married, but fierce public hostility towards the couple drove them to Italy. Initially, they were happy, but two of their children died there, and Mary never fully recovered. When Mary was only 24, her husband drowned, leaving her alone with a 2-year-old son. For her remaining 29 years, she lived in England, which she despised because of the morality and social system. She was shunned by conventional circles and worked as a professional writer to support her father and her son. Mary became an invalid at the age of 48. She died in 1851 of a brain tumour with poetic timing. The Great Exhibition, which was a showcase of technological progress, was opened. This was the same scientific technology that she had warned against in her most famous book, Frankenstein.
There is a minute now to finish the task. This is the end of task 1. Go on to task 2. Task 2. A radio program. Listen to a radio program, then choose the best answer or complete the sentences. Use only one word. There is a minute to read the task.
It's 3 o'clock and time for this week's edition of Job Spotlight with Zach Desmond.
Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to Job Spotlight. In today's programme, we'll be looking at job opportunities in the legal profession. From your letters and emails, I know this is a career that a lot of you are considering, so we've also put together a fact sheet which you can download from our website. Now, as usual, we have several guests here to help us unravel some of the mysteries of this particular profession. My first guest in the studio today is top lawyer Emily Waterstone.
Hello.
Welcome to the programme, Emily. Now, you're a barrister, aren't you?
Yes, a criminal barrister.
Uh-huh. Can you tell us exactly what a barrister does?
I'll do my best. Actually, I think most people are familiar with barristers from TV and films. We're the people who stand up in court and present the case for the prosecution or on behalf of the accused. That's the person accused of a crime.
Don't all lawyers do that?
Not really. In England, only a small proportion of lawyers work in court. Most lawyers work in offices, helping people buy houses, make their wills, get divorces, that kind of thing.
You said you were a criminal barrister. Does that mean you work for criminals?
No, not exactly. It means I work in criminal law rather than civil law.
So what's the difference?
Well, criminal law is to do with actual crimes, murder, arson, robbery and so on. Civil law isn't about crimes at all. It's the law that governs things like contracts, inheritance, business, things like that.
So you wouldn't be able to help me if I wanted to get a divorce?
I'm afraid not.
Ah.
Well, not unless divorce suddenly became a crime.
Right. Now, for our listeners who are thinking about becoming barristers, what sort of qualities do you think a good barrister needs?
The main one is self-confidence, I think. You've got to look like you know what you're doing. And communication is very important, especially in court.
I suppose a good understanding of human nature comes in useful.
Yes, and a good memory helps too.
OK. Let's talk about the training you need to do.
You have a minute now to check your work. Then you will hear the text a second time.
It's 3 o'clock and time for this week's edition of Job Spotlight with Zach Desmond.
Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to Job Spotlight. In today's programme, we'll be looking at job opportunities in the legal profession. From your letters and emails, I know this is a career that a lot of you are considering, so we've also put together a fact sheet which you can download from our website. Now, as usual, we have several guests here to help us unravel some of the mysteries of this particular profession. My first guest in the studio today is top lawyer Emily Waterstone.
Hello.
Welcome to the programme, Emily. Now, you're a barrister, aren't you?
Yes, a criminal barrister.
Uh-huh. Can you tell us exactly what a barrister does?
I'll do my best. Actually, I think most people are familiar with barristers from TV and films. We're the people who stand up in court and present the case for the prosecution or on behalf of the accused. That's the person accused of a crime.
Don't all lawyers do that?
Not really. In England, only a small proportion of lawyers work in court. Most lawyers work in offices, helping people buy houses, make their wills, get divorces, that kind of thing.
You said you were a criminal barrister. Does that mean you work for criminals?
No, not exactly. It means I work in criminal law rather than civil law.
So what's the difference?
Well, criminal law is to do with actual crimes, murder, arson, robbery and so on. Civil law isn't about crimes at all. It's the law that governs things like contracts, inheritance, business, things like that.
So you wouldn't be able to help me if I wanted to get a divorce?
I'm afraid not. Well, not unless divorce suddenly became a crime.
Right. Now, for our listeners who are thinking about becoming barristers, what sort of qualities do you think a good barrister needs?
The main one is self-confidence, I think. You've got to look like you know what you're doing. And communication is very important, especially in court.
I suppose a good understanding of human nature comes in useful.
Yes, and a good memory helps too.
OK. Let's talk about the training you need to do. Did you go to...
There is a minute now to finish the task. This is the end of task 2 and listening part.